Best known for playing Ken Barlow in the soap opera. No, he's best known for his role as taxi driver Les Battersby. No, he was sometimes seen in pubs. No, he was born in Colliehurst, which was later in Wales. No, he lived opposite All Saints on the estate with Mrs. Cassidy, J. Rick and James. No, the bank was forced to repossess his second home. No, Mrs. Cassidy did make maths pleasant. No, he said he had impressed members of the cast by the accuracy with which he read their astrological charts. No, Jones plays the lead character, Ron Harris. No, I sometimes say my name's not Les, it's Bruce. No, sponsored advert in the middle. No, despite being incident, he was treated as a suspect and lost his first wife and children as a result. No, the Battersbys arrived when number five was bought by the council and a funny family was given the space. No, Janice was disgusted with Les when he drank the money. No, Albert was a violent drunk, but his wife was a successful businesswoman who ran a restaurant and tea rooms at Alton Towers. No, he backed Conservative MP Neil Hamilton in the 1997 election. No, she brands Les as one of the middle-aged men who over the years have stymied their wife's efforts to be accepted as respectable. No, he took stepdaughter Toya out for a drive in the car, but he didn't notice the turkey walk right into the path. No, 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 despite saying goodbye to the cobbles more than 12 years ago, nothing has changed. No, he later appeared in Coronation Street playing Peter Barlow. No, I never saw them either, but they were talked of. No, he championed Sir John Major as Britain's greatest post-war Prime Minister. No, I played a young soldier in Germany who fraternised with a German girl. Although I can't remember how it ended. No, he played James, the long-lost grandson of Ken Barlow, played by his father. No, the DSS discovered Les's duplicity without Spider's help, and Les was sentenced to 150 days scrubbing graffiti. No, I don't really talk about my past. No, the same court sentenced him to 8 months imprisonment, suspended for 18 months. No, he joined his school drama group at the age of 11 and dreamt of becoming an actor.
C'était l'histoire de son premier Noël qu'il passa à jouer dans la neige. À attraper les étoiles du ciel et à les poser sur son sapin couvert de neige. C'était l'histoire de son premier Noël qu'il passa à jouer dans la neige. À attraper les cheveux des ruisseaux et à les poser sur son sapin couvert de neige. C'était l'histoire de son premier Noël qu'il passa à jouer dans la neige. À dessiner dans le ciel des personnages de crèche avec un petit morceau de nuage. C'était l'histoire de son premier Noël qu'il passa à jouer dans la neige.
Dominique Colas ending today's program with C'était l'histoire from Le Temps d'écouter. We heard Home Secretary doing Les Battersby and Richard Young's doing The Omnium, both from a new Chocolate Monk compilation called The Juice from Your Pen is Running Down My Leg, Volume 1. Paul Evans from the B-side of Hello, This is Joni, and I'm sorry, but I'm not home, but if you leave me your name and number, I promise to call back when I get home. Guess what? Lullaby Tissue Company's the name of that one. Grateful Dead doing France, the B-side to Shakedown Street. Eddie Kendricks with Date with the Rain. My name's Scott. I'll see you next week on Freeform Radio, WFMU in East Orange, WMFU in Mount Hope, in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM, worldwide online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned. Hardy White's Miracle Nutrition is coming right your way. Bye-bye.
Welcome. Ding, 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 ding. Why are you doing the theme like that, Hardy? Because sometimes I make the show too long, and then the theme song doesn't fit. Because it's like 50 seconds or something like that. This is Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? And then there's that beautiful shape note song. And then the show. I spent 8 years of my life trying to faithfully and meticulously recreate Abraham's house out of the instructions provided in the Bible. And we built a structure out of clay and straw and wood with a central courtyard and some north-facing suites, a west-facing kitchen, south-facing and east-facing suites. And I spent all my life savings doing this, following the biblical instructions, which I found out later are not in the Bible. I got duped. I was tricked. It's really from Paradise Lost or something. I didn't even look it up. I thought, oh, I've wasted all that time. My goodness. You know, a lot of things that people think are in the Bible really aren't. They're in Paradise Lost. Like when the devil has that big ball, has that big party and everything, and no, that's Master and Margarita. All of those blend together for me into one big mythical tale. It's wonderful. Now, any preacher will tell you the ideal congregation has low biblical knowledge. Because then you can be very creative and you can sort of micromanage your community. You know, the Lord says that they don't like the sweet barbecue sauce. It's an abomination unto the Lord. Oh, all right. Yes, it's not just a matter of taste. You can't have it in your restaurant. And so you can do all sorts of wonderful things like that. Yes, Moses didn't care for that. I only like white meat. All right. Don't even bother having the thighs. And I don't know if that's in there. There's a lot of dietary things, though, in the Bible that I think are useful. What are they? I can't say offhand. I'm sure it says something like they're very detailed. Now, some of them are the laws of kashrut, you know, what's kosher and all. And I guess some of it is like, don't eat if there's a cutlet and it has poo on it. No, don't eat it. In fact, the Hebrew might be very blunt like that, like poo cutlet, no. Or no poo cutlets. Could be. I don't know. I'm curious, but not enough to do anything about it. I love to stay right there on the edge of curiosity. Why complete it? Why finish it and get the knowledge? I don't want it to ever end. I don't want that feeling of not knowing. I've told them this in school. The teacher would be, I feel like you're sat of my curiosity needs satisfying, but I feel oversated. This is too much. It's like, you know how bodybuilders have to overeat? And you hear them saying like, oh, I had to have so much growth shake that I threw up. Well, that's no good. You don't want to do that. And I feel that way with knowledge. Sometimes I get too much of it in me and I think this is just leading to more questions. Ow, agony. Now I got to maintain that. It is like bodybuilding. I'm puffed up. Now I've gotten my brains all swole. And now I got to go. I bulked up and now I got to cut down or something for when I show off my brain. Can't do it. That's what you have to do. The cutting in that intellectually is like when you have to do something for the public. You bulk up, you speak, go in the gym, which is the university. Everything has a corollary. Oh, but here, what are you talking about to me today? Well, just generally, knowledge. Knowledge and wisdom and things in the Bible by Hardy White. I would like to do someday a children's Bible. And it's not a Bible for children, but it's more like that Bugsy Malone movie where everybody in the Bible would be children. It would be like baby Muppet babies. So I'm baby Moses. Baby Moses would stay baby Moses and just go around his little reed basket. Baby Abraham or Babraham or something would say, be some cute coinage. And Sarah would say, I'm too young to be pregnant or something, just the opposite of what's in the Bible. And you'd go, you're right, you're a baby. Oh, it would be, I think it'd be good. Who would it appeal to? I don't know, it might be blasphemous. You never know. There's a lot of rules, and because it's such a widely practiced set of religions that follow. And I'm talking about the Bible you get in hotels. There's, you know, few religions follow it. And so they all have opinions about it. And they don't really care about the translation because they already know they're pretty set on what they believe anyway. So don't confuse me with the literal words. And I've had that discussion before. It's all right. Yes, I have to. I'll tell you what. I'm going to go talk to my preacher and I will get back to you. And he will have an answer for your devil question. And that's how I imagine most theological discussions going. In some areas I know, maybe they used to be, you know, I don't know whether, it's always a tough thing when you're arguing theology because you go, what have I done? I thought I was being creative and now I'm a blasphemer. Now I'm having my skin taken off. I thought I was just thinking outside the box. Now you've crossed the line. And I wonder what that line is really. Because I've known a lot, because it becomes secret knowledge. I'm going to tell you that right now. I've known a lot of religious people. And if you do get to the levels where you're really discussing things, they purposely don't say what, you know, like, well, you know, that's we don't really say that out loud. And I think that's why I know that's for sure in a couple religions. So bless everybody. It's an understanding, though, that it's not worth really being burned. And I mean that literally. My goodness. You don't want to say certain things. Now, there's certain things are, you know, I'm willing to make a stand on. And one of them is that the biblical character of Isaac wore literal clown makeup. And it was like a juggalo or something. No, that's a good one. I'm trying to do a hoax, because this is the wonderful thing. I've stumbled on some paper from the 13th century. And now I just want to write something fake on it. Because then when they do the analysis, they'll say, well, this looks pretty real. Did you do the ink? No, but it looks pretty good. I would use something blue-black or something nice. I have a fountain pen, so I'd use that. But it would be modern ink. Maybe I could somehow make it out of mummies or something that would go, this is very old ink, actually. Or buy some old ink. You can get all sorts of things. I got ribbon for my 50s typewriter online. So if I was saying, I'm looking for old, you could probably even join a group that say, I'm forging medieval documents, and I have a question. What is it, brother? How do I make my own, how do I fake my ink age? Because I've got the paper, I have that. And then they'll help you out and everything. Sometimes they'll even give you ideas, because they go, also, I don't have a scam. Can you give me an idea for a scam? And they'll do that. Hitler's Diary, that's a good one. Who came up with that one? If you go back, that's not even a very old one. And it was it made the covers of magazines and things like that. I wonder, you've got to be very careful with that. Whose diary, though? I wonder what's a good one. Just a fictional person's diary would be good. And you insist that they were real. That might be Oliver Twist's diary or something. He was a real person. There was a real orphan that did all sorts of wonderful things. People used to put on musicals in the streets, especially the lower classes in the Victorian era, and everything would sing a lot. And I would that would be a what a magical, wonderful time of just soot-faced cockneys breaking out into song and jumping on things. They're athletic. And when they wore these kind of spandex trousers, it was a wonderful time. And the newsboy hat or something like that. I've gone back in the time machine. Now, many of you know that I have traveled literally, figuratively, imaginatively, but also in reality in time, what I call time. And I've talked to historic figures. I've sent this out as a tweet, but Samuel Pepys, who lived in the time of the Great Fire of London in the 17th century, his name is spelled P-E-P-Y-S. And you go, well, that's the surname Pepys. And I go, I know, and it used to be that. And he got teased terribly. Samuel Pepys, like that. Samuel Pepys, then he poo-poos. And he's like, I couldn't take it anymore, so I'm Pepys. And I go, that's cool. I suggested it, actually. I go, I know a good pronunciation. Like people. We say that is short for people. Hey, you're Pepys. It's also a popular candy. And if there had been, imagine if there was a peep factory during the Great Fire of London, they would all melted together in a great marshmallow rock. Mm-mm-mm. Marshmallow rock reminds me, that was a 70s cartoon interstitials for children to help them understand marshmallows better. You know, one was Our Marshmallows Kashrut. Was very popular because they have gelatin in them. And gelatin was made from the hooves of hooves. You know what I meant. The hooves of hooves. The hooves or hoofuses of horses. It's hard to say. Equine. Equine. Things, all things equine. I live in an equine area, a horsey part of the country. And I'm surrounded by horses. I'm not used to it. I'm used to one, you'll see. Where I'm from farther south, the horses are always look like they are feral or something. And I guess people ride them. I don't know. But I've never heard that people take great care of them before they shoot them while they're doing their job. That makes me sad. I would like to. What is there an animal that I would ride on? I don't know, because I don't know that we could ever really come to an agreement where I felt I had consent, unless I could speak, the same language. Otherwise, just hopping on another creature just feels like, I don't know, like, is this okay? All right, he said yes. And if it has to really take some convincing, then I don't know. Now, something that really disturbed me as a child was the Swiss Family Robinson. I've since met Swiss people, so now I get it. But they were hopping on zebras and ostriches, and riding and had a race. And then I think they, in my mind, they go to war with indigenous people or something like that. It's a horror show. And then they had a ride at Disney World. I say a ride, it was a tree. They go, how's this a ride? Go, it's a ticket for a tree and don't move. It's a tree. I didn't like that one too much. There was a lot at Disney World. I was like, this is fake. The submarine, there was a submarine, and it wasn't like, well, listen, there's a happy medium between going to the dismal depths of the Titanic site and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Disney World. There's something in between. I actually did go on one, the in-between one. What am I thinking? I went to the elderly relative, took me on a cruise, and we went to Barbados. And in Barbados, we went on a submarine tour. And they take you, and there's just tourists sitting on benches looking out windows, and they take you down just a few feet so they could get your body up quickly. But, and it was nice, it was a little, but I went on it. I wouldn't do that again, but I don't think there was any danger, but who knows. But that's a real in-between version. People go to great extremes, and you don't need to, really. So I just was a kid. I thought, okay, the submarine could go deeper. A tree isn't a ride. I had a whole list of Disney World critiques. And they would say, well, what did you like? And I go, I don't know. You know, I'm just saying. Here's the things that just didn't, I don't know. It didn't do it for me. What did you want as a kid, Hardy? I like more something immersive, if you will. There was a western town in Florida called Six Gun Territory. And it was all, they'd have stunt shows where people, they'd have a shootout. This is so, what a great thing to bring kids to. People were going to murder one another off of rooftops and then fall. I'm thinking back, I go, wow, there's a real gunpowder in the air. And it was an old western town. So you could go, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm horrified. How terrifying. They go, yes, there was these towns where it was anarchy. They were on the, wow, what a, and it was in a park. But I liked that as a kid because you could imagine yourself, I imagine I'm one of these horrible people out here using brute force to enforce my twisted immorality. But, you know, all the TV, but I didn't know, coming up in your culture, you never know you're the baddie, you little baddie kids. You know, I go, these are cool. This looks cool. Everybody wearing a gun. Yep, that's fun. But it was really kind of scary. And the poor horses, they don't know what's going on. They're just loyal to anybody. If they're good or bad, they go, there's a horrible psychopath on your back. Oh, all right, well, I'm doing my best. They don't know. Do that with races, you know. Oh, I almost won the race. I was running my fastest, but I broke my leg. I'm sorry. You know, I promised to heal up fast and be out there next week. I said I promised to heal up fast and be out there next week. What? That's how we were. Thank you for your service. Blam. What's this tent? Is there a party? So I don't know. I love them. But I think in my society, horses would just be walking around on their own. That's the test, whether you're like an animal or not. Are you willing to just share the town with them? You know, let them drink out of the fountain and everything. And not have to use them or exploit them for anything, necessarily. Except for chickens. You could. You just pick. It's like you could pick up your neighbor and eat it. So you just pick up one of the neighbors for dinner. And one of that, you know that guy you work with? The rooster? Yeah, could you grab him on the way home? Because we're having chicken again.
I'm not sure whether I could live that way. I do in my mind. Oh, my goodness. In my imagination, I live all sorts of different ways, different lives. You know, I think a lot of us do this, have their own yellow millet dream, imaginary lifetime that they think about, don't you? No. Don't you escape into some? No, I don't. Some people have other past lives. I'm having one right now. Unlike most people, I'm having my past life now. Is this your first time through? I think so. How do you know? Because it's all weird. Because it feels weird. I don't remember any of this. Doesn't seem familiar. No. Did it when you were a child? No. No. It seemed like a Salvador Dali nightmare. For years, what are these horrible, twisted faces? No, none of it. I did not be born thinking I am the reincarnated, the other one, Dalai Lama, Salvador Dalai Lama. I'm both. I'm all rolled into one. No, I didn't. I think it still feels quite alien to me. So maybe I think this is the first time and I'm going to have some wonderful memories. It's going to be a little baby that's born. Just as the world is burning up, and the baby is like, I used to be somebody called Harvey Worb. You know, because your memories don't go intact or something. They can't through all that because they rot or burn up or something. I don't know how they get transferred or if they do. If they do, it's what a magical, wonderful process. And I don't know how ghosts are made. Are they made or are they born that way? Well, I don't know. They may not be born that way. What if ghosts aren't ghosts of dead people? They're just other people and living somewhere else. That'd be interesting, too. And they say, are you from the past? Maybe. I don't know. Who are you? There was a movie where there was about this lady and her kids or something, and then you realize they're the ghosts. And the other people are not ghosts. They're the ghosts. And but I was thinking, what if there was a movie where everybody is the ghost and there are no living people, but so therefore there are only living people? That might be interesting. So I guess if a movie doesn't acknowledge ghosts, it is a ghost movie in a way. That might be true. If there's a veil, like there's just other people, we're in rooms crowded with people, there's invisible other people, and their whatever permanent version of their personality at death floating around is like a cloud coming out of a vape pen with a hat, and that's them now. That'd be interesting, because a lot of times I feel like I'm alone and in private. And I act that way. But if I was being, if it was an audience of dozens or hundreds, that'd be interesting. Maybe you just get, once you get going, doing whatever you don't want people to see, the crowd dissipates. If the ghosts are able to leave even, I don't even know. I have seen pictures of people that used to live in the house that I'm in. There was a where did I see it? It might be on a funeral site because the first owner's dead. And but I have a picture of him standing by the fireplace. And I think I was doing some detective work, and I found the first owner, and then I found his obituary site. You know, sometimes funeral homes have an online thing, and there was old pictures of him on it, and they do that sometimes. And they were in what is now my house, but it's his house really. So if he wanted to come back go around like that, that'd be all right. I'd understand that. That's why I have the white noise going 24/7, because I don't want to hear all that. I can't do anything for you. Maybe I could. I don't ever listen close enough. What if it was something very easy? You know, could you lower the temperature 1 degree? Can't hear you. Can't help you. Go to heaven. Move on. That'd be what if you're telling somebody, what if this is moving? What if this is it? And you keep, and those stupid ghost hunters keep going, you know, move on to what? I live here. That'd be awful. Be cast out. I'm dead, insult to injury. Not only am I dead, but now I'm being chased off. Oh, that's awful. Where do we belong? Oh, the human soul. I think all that, regardless of its reality or irreality, is an indication of our current and very real fear. Should we be fearful? Of course. Oh, my goodness. What would you, if you were, if we were in the raising a family in the woods or something, what would you tell your little babies? You'd say, be terrified of everything. Well, that, once you're terrified of everything, then you can kind of let it go and just concentrate on what to do to avoid perishing. That's what I think. So you get the fear over with. Maybe there's some kind of ceremony where you all go see a Vincent Price movie, and then you go, all right, now that we got the fear over with, now we can go on and live our lives and make decisions where we see a minimal amount of disembodied corpses or something like that. You can plan your life so you don't. And a lot of times it takes cooperating. Like, let's not kill each other with bombs, first of all. Can we agree to do that? No, I enjoy doing it too much. That's the thing, isn't it? Once you realize that, too, I'm trying to argue people out of mass murder. And it feels like that's unpopular to do that. Doesn't it? Oh, peace, no war. Oh, it's unrealistic, you know, because who wouldn't want to see all the innocent people maimed and killed? I guess who wouldn't? But it does feel wrong. I don't let that stop me. So as I react to cruelty, some of us do, and I'm not going to be made to feel other because of it. You know, you should harden yourself up. No, thank you. I'm going to make an adult joke off the air. But no, I don't care to harden my heart that way. I got other things, other priorities. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my friends. I want to explore the mysteries of this world with you. Just enough to occupy ourselves and have a certain feeling and experience. I want to experience joy. And you do that in a multifaceted way, I find. You can't just do it with cake or ice cream or dancing. Sometimes you have to do it with discovering something, learning something, finding a new skill, building Abraham's house. How are we going to make this mud structure? Another thing I would like to make is a small but usable one-man coracle. That is a round, sort of frisbee basket-shaped boat. And it just kind of sits on the water instead of in it. And you can use it to float around. You can't steer it very well. But I've always wanted to make one, and so I think I will. I'm making it a life goal. Do I think that I will ever fulfill this life goal? I don't know. How would I know that? How would I know? I'm not one of those people who go, yes, I tell myself something for certain. I can still work towards a goal without saying, this is going to happen no matter what. I can hold two thoughts in my head at once. Never had any problem doing that. I can do a thing that I know is futile. I do not mind bailing water out of a boat. I never feel like, I can't wait till we get to the last. It's just a process. Just doing some water bailing. It's part of it. There's no, you know, it doesn't end until we sink and we're dead, you know. As long as we're bailing, that's part of the living. So nothing ever stays done. My goodness, art doesn't stay done. Paintings don't stay painted. Songs don't stay sung. You have to remake everything. Meals don't stay made. They get et. And then you eat them up, and you got to make a meal the next day. And you wash the dishes, and one thing happens, and then another thing happens, or that other thing isn't going to happen unless that thing happens. And oh, we go back and forth. That's how a wave works. Oh, we're all riding on a wave, a vibrating string. Up and down, up and down. Now, we would just go whoop like that if there wasn't a constant repeating. And that's time. It's time that's doing this. So to understand and to ride time, think about rhythm. Not getting from the beginning to the end, just being in a song. Right? So when you're counting beats, you start over every measure. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. That's it. It's not 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 19. Don't do it that way. Break it up so that you can hear the song, so you can see the rhythm, because the rhythm is the life, and the song is the life. And the words are the song, and we're making it up as we go along. And all the things we say become reality. And even the Bible itself tells you that words create reality, and that this is a word-created reality. And that by reading this story, you are consumed by it. It is like Jumanji or something. You start to participate in it, and it sucks it you in it up to you. You have to go into it to live. It becomes your world and your reality once you have access to a story like that. Oh, and we go into it and we ride the story, or rather the song. Oh, how's that? You like that? Oh my goodness. I'm here to get you to join me now, won't you? I say that every week. And I mean it in a lot of different ways. And one of the ways I mean it is to not only join me now, but to join me, join up with me, to become part of a bigger thing. What is that? What are we working towards? No, nothing really. It's just a network for no reason. That's the best kind. Because who knows what the goal should be? But we can't do anything without the network, without being all together. Oh, we are separated only by a little bit of space and our incompatible personalities. Isn't it wonderful all being different? I don't have no problem with that. I can love you and respect you and be absolutely unable to tolerate your presence, I think. No, I don't know. I think so. I hope so. Because, you know, that's an acknowledgement of difference. You know, if there's going to be variations on people, then definitely there's going to be. I can absolutely feel one and say, oh, there's a, you know, brotherhood or siblinghood of humankind or something. That's what I feel that way. I also feel that some people I don't want to see at the family reunion or whatever. I think that's fine. I can have that. Because I value the difference, too. I know how this is all working a bit. And it works by throwing everything out there and seeing what sticks. It really does. And you can see that in all of biology. You know, you can make a story out of it after the fact and say, this has happened because this. But you don't really ever know until far into the future why a thing happened or if ever. It just the people, the things that make it because it was their time to do it. And I feel that way. So you could just as well use a losing strategy at any given time. You could be the type of human that is not meant to be. Isn't that wonderful? That's still beautiful. Yep, I was too sensitive for the world. That's fine, but I still got to be there. Yeah, isn't that great? Yeah. It's just I will not be one of the psychopathic alligator people of the future. No, they probably won't be your descendants. That's fine with me. I'm the smooth, sensitive monkey person.
That's right.
And hats off to the cockroach, tardigan, crocodilian beetle race of made of steel of the future dominant species on this planet, and they're beautiful people too, aren't they? The cyber people. I don't know who's going to make it. It doesn't matter to me, because I'll be gone. And hopefully, I will not be living the family circus nightmare of being a ghost who can witness what's currently going on. What a punishment. That's awful. It's like, here, witness the things you are missing. Here's your children growing old. Oh, I've got to watch everything. That seems awful. So I hope that's not the reality. You were forced to watch the living. That's some kind of Dickensian punishment or something. I don't really want that. I hope I move on. I forget, and they go, your descendants are this, that, and the other. And I go, what? Who? I've forgotten about them. I'm up here in heaven, which is like the villages, but you get to, it's all your friends, your cool friends. And there's still golf carts. It's fun. I think there would be in a kind of heaven. Something, you know, does this use any energy? No, they don't use any energy. These golf carts run on bad feelings. We capture them, and then we burn them up in our golf carts. Fun! And I like to run mine into the water hazard and just leave it there. I was more kind of people. Whatever happened to those kind of folk? Because I had those in school. I remember there was a lot of people in high school. Like, what did you do this weekend? Oh, I stole some vehicle and ran it into water. Yes. All right. And now you end up, now you're probably voting for them. Who knows? Or you're dropping your car off to be repaired. Oh, you're the, I remember you now. But we don't have, but still, a beautiful community. I want to be surrounded by all, not all types, maybe, but a reasonable amount of types. Who knows? I don't want them to be too, not too crazy. I don't want to live in an era of psychopathic butchers. What do you mean by that? Like people work in the meat department, but they're psychopaths? No, we probably have that now, and that's just fine. As long as they're doing something productive. Occasionally, though, they'll write something creepy on the meat description. No, no, no. I just meant, you know, I don't want to live in some kind of age of conquest where they ride on horses, well-meaning horses, and they have large swords and they're chopping off heads and stealing spices. This might have been thousands of years ago, but, you know, it could happen again. History repeats itself. If there ever is like a spice trade again or something, ooh, I don't know. Maybe that would be a harbinger. There's certain things that are omens. You know, if this happens, then this will happen. It might not be tea leaves, but, you know, if your neighbor moves in and you see certain items being moved in, that could be problematic. Like those very, very large Japanese drums. I don't know. I'm trying to think what else. Indoor cases and cases of weapons. Well, why does that concern you? Well, I just, you know, I like to use my toys. And so if my neighbor was planning on using them, I might be a little bit concerned because I have thin walls. And so they're really not meant to withstand armament or fire from enemy fire. Had I known, I would have built a nice little fortress. I think I could have made a neat one. If we do ever have to live in little castles and anything, then it's a good idea to become part of a co-op and say, let's go in on a castle. Because I can't imagine a tiny one would be of much use. So we'll just build a walled city. They could wall an existing hippie co-op, land co-op. You know, this was started in 1974 with five families. They all changed their last name to Peace. So we call them the five Peace families. And now this acreage has evolved into a walled city with buttresses, and we've got hot oil we can dump into the moat. That would be okay. And then there's people that just kind of roam the countryside. Well, I know this from fiction. This is popular fiction now, movies and everything. The thing that you are picturing is the past. It seems like the future. Yes, because it's the past, because it's already happened. And what's confusing you is the fashion, because it's changed. You know, people wearing different things. So you're just seeing the Middle Ages, but people are wearing silver or something. You know, they're wearing NASA reflective wear. And that's, but it's virtually the same thing. And so who should I be? That's why we look at these old stories. Who am I in the Bible story? You're supposed to put yourself as any of those characters, even the crummy ones. You know, am I an arrogant psychopath like that? Yes, that's you. And it seems, doesn't that seem like you? Yes, I guess so. That's nice. Well, you just have a description of human nature and you see yourself in it. You go, am I the jerky king? Yes, you are. Okay. I like to be able to do that. I can look at myself in a hard light. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't really mistake me for me. What do you mean? I don't know what I mean. I don't know. I don't take me personally. Maybe I think I used to confuse me with me, but I'm not me. I'm not sure who me is. Me's a composite, and me's constructed. A lot of me's constructed by you. Oh, thank you for making me. But here's the thing. You don't always tell me the me you've made. So I don't always know who I am because you're keeping it secret. And then people make different yous. You can never know really who you are, nor would you want to. I think a lot of people who are celebrities concern themselves with that them. And they get very, very messed up because they think, who am I based on how I am seen? Then that's, oh, how scary. But I and all my friends, some of you, we have been allowed to sort of just dissipate and not have to be seen and defined by too many people. Because the more people that do that, the more you can be made into something, a sort of, you know, golem that's created by others. And they don't tell you anything about who you are. I do used to have a friend and she'd get mad at me for things that I did in her dreams. And I tried to tell her, that's not me. It's me, but it's not me. It felt exactly like being an actor who had been on one of those true crime, you know, this is a recreation of a crime. This man, and then have an actor doing it. And then I think, you know, people would call the cops when they saw that actor. And that feels like the same sort of thing. It's like, I'm mad at you, Hardy, for what you did in my dream. You know, I feel foolish denying it was me when it was me, but it's not me. It's your me. So there's you me and my me and all different me's. Mimi, that's what I wish I had a lot of children. I'd name them that. Mimi, Mimi, Mimi. Who else? Jaime is one. Oh, my goodness. I do like being around people. It would be a challenge to not name them. There's been 12 people living together and none of them have names. I wonder how that would work. How would Christmas or something would be a nightmare. But maybe they'd probably just adopt symbols or something or numbers. People find a way of, because you gotta, at some point you have to, you know, get somebody's attention. You know, watch out! That it would end up being their name because you'd have to be consistently get their attention. So maybe that's what you're thinking your name that way. It's something people yell when you're about to fall off the subway platform. Watch out. And that's you. That's an important you. Get to know and respond to that you. And the other ones, probably not so much. Oh, my goodness. Have you ever felt unburdened by yourself? Like maybe you're getting, you're swimming or something. You're just floating. And you're just for a brief moment. And that maybe it's at the beach or something. Or you'd be in a pool. And I've just been in a pool recently. And I hadn't been one in years. And I haven't floated freely since I was in a mikveh, I think. So I'm in a pool, and I'm floating, and just for an instant, you know, I got that feeling of not being responsible for anything, where I felt that I didn't even have to be responsible for my own body. I felt absolutely liberated, you know, like I was a little baby or I was a dying person. I felt like I no longer had a horse in that race, that I was just being in an exquisite moment, that I had forgotten who I was, what I was doing, that there wasn't a yesterday or a tomorrow. Oh, and it happened just in an instant, and it was beautiful and free-floating. It must have something to do with gravity. Gravity must somehow remind you about time. It's some nuisance thing, and when you get rid of the gravity, sometimes you get rid of the sense of time. And when you float outside of time, it all comes together. Oh, it was a beautiful experience to have. And then things went back to being, you know, stressful or awful. But it's nice to be reminded of it. Say, oh, that's great. At least there's an end. No, that's at least there was a beginning. Doesn't bother me. We're going to have, if there's a certain lightness to all our existence, then what's there to worry about? You know, you're scaring me. Here, let me hold your hand. This is all crazy. It's probably a dream. Don't worry about it. I'm afraid. That's probably a dream. Don't worry about it. Let's not worry about it. Worry about what? I don't even know. Probably just existential stuff. Worry about the real. Go ahead and worry about actual things. Do that. I'm for that. But get all the other things off your plate. Because we can take care of those together. Those are sometimes just the detritus of a solitary mind. And we can clean that up for you and get your living space a little more tidy so that you can take on the bigger challenges. Oh, and I am here for you, but just during this hour. Not during the rest of the week or ever. No, I might be. Who knows? It doesn't, you know, I could. I'm here for you, I'm sure. Not everybody, all the time. But show-wise, I feel like I want to be connected to you. I want to speak to you as another human being. Oh, there's different ways to entertain. There's different ways to enlighten and inform, aren't there? But I really like the ones that emphasize the connectivity, the sort of unity of the experience of being a living creature, because it really does unite us all, and not just human beings, but all our doggies and everything like that. I live with dogs and cats and all, and so I have and there's some fish and lots of things in the backyard that I let live there that other people would chase away or kill or something, but I think, oh, peace to all living creatures. And so I have a little ecosystem. But I feel for all of them. And I like to be able to make things for a world that where we're all acknowledged, and that we're living in it, and it hurts, and it's great, and it's grand. But I also know that it calls for great variation and invention, and has room for all sorts of free, crazy wackiness, and that we need to experiment more, I think, with the way that we are, the way that we make things, the way that we do things, throw more variations in there, more possibilities. And so that's why I try not to obey any conventions, and I don't even go to conventions unless I was invited to one, and that would be lovely. Say, we'd like to have you at HardyCon. I go, there's a HardyCon? Yes, we're on our third, and you never invited me. Oh, sorry, oversight. It's oversight named after me. Yeah, but why would you not want me there? Well, we're asking now. All right, well, I'm saying yes, and I'm very honored. I'm going to be loving at HardyCon, and I will sign things. I'll be signing photographs of myself and my voice. I'll be signing my voice, and you can get that. I can yell into a T-shirt for you, anything like that, because that's how I like to just or give you a good vibration. I'll shake hands with you and I'll go and pretend to see your future like that scary movie. Oh, no. Okay. Oh, be careful. I'll say that after I shake your hand. Oh, God. Like that. And that's going to be my new thing when I shake people's hands, is to have my eyes roll back and go, oh, I'm so sorry. Maybe that'll make me feel better, because sometimes I feel socially awkward. And it would make me feel less awkward to be thought a complete lunatic. No, I guess not. I'll tell you something. I want to share with you something that happened to me yesterday. And I'm both glad it happened and terrified that it happened. And what it was is I went and saw an open mic stand-up comedy night. And there must have been a dozen, at least, wannabe stand-up comics. Some people doing it for the first time. Some people doing it seeming like it's the first time, but it not being, all sorts and everything in between. And it was something else. Oh my goodness, what we think other people think would be funny is interesting to me. And I was trying to be generous with my laughter. I laughed at most of the things that I thought seemed to be a joke. You know, when you're like applying for a job and you really don't know what's going on, you're just trying to take cues and laugh when it seems right. That's what I was doing. And it was stressful. I found the whole thing very stressful because I didn't want to hurt any of the people on stage, but then some of them made me want to hurt them. So, you know, it's a mixed bag. But it was wonderful seeing other human beings who were told they're funny by high school friends. And who's to say who's right and who's wrong? And one drink minimum. And I had a cola. I shouldn't have had a cola. It made me feel so sick. I don't have late in the day caffeine like that. So I was sitting there. I was a little bit dyspeptic. I was a little bit feeling, you know, like I had heartburn. And then people mistaking bigotry for humor or something. And I go, oh, bless your heart. That's you're being horrible. Well, it was that kind of experience. And a friend was there, had performed, was very good. But he had done it before, I think. And so that I had no problem legitimately laughing. But I still felt queasy. I've had a lot of, I'm thinking back, and there's been moments in my life that have been defined by either severe excruciating cramps and diarrhea or nausea. And it goes, it's just the beautiful background music of that event for me in the memory. I go, yes. Oh, and I remember that. And I was doubled over with pain. At my high school graduation that happened, I had, it was insane, the degree of excruciating pain I was in the entire time that the commencement speaker was speaking. This was the worst. Our high school was supposed to have like a good commencement speaker, and I guess they canceled. And at the last minute, it was just a football coach. They just asked the football coach. And I thought, this is the worst. What? We got to hear him all the time. So the football coach doing a fishing story or something. You go, it was supposed to be some local realtor or something. Now it's just this doofus. So I don't know. And I felt nervous, I guess, because I thought, well, God, I don't want to leave high school because I'm completely unqualified to do anything. And now I'm just terrified, and I should have died young. I made a terrible mistake. So I didn't want to move on with my life. And maybe that was it. That's why I had diarrhea. But I understand that now. It made me a more compassionate person. Now my heart is more open. And I go, yes, I too feel like throwing up. So I understand, friend. Come, let me embrace you from a distance, pukey. I'm simpatico, though. But that doesn't mean I won't be up to my elbows in it. Bless you. We all deal with things as much as we can. And I give that to everybody has different tolerances of things. I don't know how much pain you're in. I'm not here to judge your pain. People do that to other people, though. They make judgments about what other people are feeling. I believe you, whatever you tell me. That's all I have to go on. I can't shove some kind of meter in your head and figure out. you tell me you're in pain, and I believe you. And so, you know, you tell me you need help, I believe you. I'm not here to, it's not rationed. There's a, should be a bottomless, endless pit of it. I've only got so much help I can give you. I almost got so much love. I hope not. I keep spending all the love I have because I'm pretty sure my well is going to be renewed. You have to do that. You don't have a finite amount of love, or compassion, or forgiveness. Just treat it like it's a constantly renewing well. It's tapped into a spring. So your well isn't just you. Your well goes underground and connects to other wells. My well, everything, the source of this. We're all tapped into it. So you could say, Aeneas, go ahead. Keep loving. Keep giving your heart. Keep giving your heart. We'll make sure that well stays fresh and pure and the water of compassion keeps coming up clear and beautiful. And occasionally, there's something in it. What? Oh, I mean like a jewel, like a gemstone or something. All right, that's weird. I don't know what it doesn't really mean anything. I was just, my imagination got away from me. Things you might find in a well that are interesting. An old, cool old shoe, but it's preserved somehow. I don't know. I'd like to find antiques. I would just hold on to them and then die, and then they'd return to the antique market. So maybe I should just cut out the middleman, leave them there. Why move them around, right? Just go experience them somewhere. I do that with paintings. Instead of being an international art thief, I just go to museums. I figure that it's much easier for me. It's you just have to, you weigh consequences. And I've weighed that one. I think this way I can experience the painting without going to prison for the rest of my life. And that's worked out pretty good. Also, you can take a picture of it. I would like to do that. Can we do that with other people's money? Can I take a picture of your gold? And then I'm going to go spend it. That'd be lovely if things worked that way. I don't want to deny wealth to anybody. Probably, especially me. That'd be wonderful. I wouldn't mind being wealthy for a day. And if I was wealthy, it really only would be for a day. Because I imagine that I could spend that pretty quickly. Any amount of money you name. Name amount of money. So you're spent. I can spend, I already can tell you, I can already itemize it for you. No matter what amount you can give me. I feel like my wants are endless. I don't prioritize them. But they're there. They're really there. I've thought about it. My needs, they're mostly met, I think. And the ones that aren't, I don't worry about them. They'll be met, maybe. When I need love, I'm given love. When I need strength, I find strength. So it's been happening, and I thank you for it. I want to thank you. I'm going to be in a state of thankfulness all the time. Can you join me? No, not really. I don't want to do this. Come on now. Pray with me. No, I don't really want to pray with me. I don't pray with me. I'm just kidding. I want to just start doing that to people. Is telling them, you know, I'd like you to go to church with me. Oh, okay, no. Some of them, I have some really polite friends that would, if you said that, you go, I'm in a new church, and I'd really like you to go with me just this once. They'd do it. It would be awful and painful. I felt that way at the open mic stand-up comedy thing. It felt exactly like someone said, you know, I'd like you, if you could come to my church this Sunday, I'd really appreciate it. I'm singing in the choir. Okay. I will. Ah! Don't tell me I've never made sacrifices. Children's, I don't want to be curmudgeonly or anything, but some children's dance recitals, I love dance, but you know, you don't get to pick what kind of dances they're doing. And I had a niece, and they do like sparkly suit baton dance things. She was real little too. And I'd go to these things in Atlanta, and it would just, oh my goodness, because 99% of the children are not my niece, you see? And it was once she'd be done, I go, oh, that's great, you know, she didn't drop the baton or anything. And then you're there, like they don't let you just leave. Now you're watching other people's children. And that's their responsibility, not mine. And I don't even approve of it aesthetically. I go, no, what they're wearing, what they're doing, what they're, everything, against it. So I would get up and yell. No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. But it's sometimes it's bad. The performances are bad. I've seen children do great, like some do like traditional dances or something. Fantastic. I'm very traditional. I don't mean like that. But, you know, stuff that's not goofy. There's just kind of goofy, sparkly, made-up silliness that they teach children. When there's just perfectly good dance traditions. You know, zillions of them. Pick one. What kind of dance do you like, Hardy? Oh, thank you for asking. I like most types, except the one I just described. So that's easy, isn't it? So I like to see people express themselves through physical movement. It's really wonderful. I really liked the Lockers when I was a kid. Tony Basil Fred Barry I'm blanking on the guy actually. Amazing to me as a kid, and I love that kind of stuff. So that was like proto hip hop dancing, which is fantastic. And you know, I like to do ceremonial dances that summon demons and all kinds of spirits and everything. I make those up myself, and that's a fantastic thing to do. I don't know if you do that with friends. You have a little bonfire late at night and you go, let's flirt with incantations and everything. Let's see if we can summon something from another realm. And no, it doesn't ever work. Go ahead and do it. Oh, I don't know. That sounds sketchy. I bet you won't. I challenge you. You won't be able to do it. You wouldn't be able to summon something from another realm. Especially, you know, even if you really needed it, I don't think it would happen. Because I've tried to do it, like during like real estate deals and everything, you're selling a house. And I think, I got the only way that I'm really going to, is like I need to summon something. Like some demon or some spirit. The floor has to change into like molten lava. And some devilish, horned, ancient specter needs to rise up. And in a roaring voice, get out, like that. And then I could get, oh, I don't know, 10, 20 grand off the asking. But that's an old, old realtor trick. That goes back to Babylonian, Sumerian real estate transactions where you would you'd plant some kind of demon in the house and they would, you know, once it even got to the appraisal, that's where things would all go belly up, is the appraiser would get in there and go, oh, this place is haunted, like that, and scurry out of there. These things go back, are very, very ancient, and we all share these things, and I hope that you share something, that you've made a connection today with your friend Hardy White. On WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Freeform Radio. Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad to be with you, my friend, and I will see you again next week.
Okay, I'm like a mahogany. Twin snake was ebony. name is Mahogany. Twin's name is Ebony. Her 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 name is Mahogany. Twin's name is Ebony.
I'm